So this morning we are in Hebrews chapter 11, and we're talking about faith. Faith is one of those words, though, that you say it in a sentence, and then you have to ask someone to define it sometimes, because they can be saying something, and you're like, you think you know what they're saying, but they actually mean something completely different. Like faith and love and God's will, they all have different meanings sometimes when we say them. So before I start talking, I'm just going to define what I think faith is by first saying what I'm not saying and then saying what I'm saying, if that makes sense to you. Okay? I think I lost all of you already, but that's okay. I'll gain you back. So faith in some words, in some places in our world, especially in our culture, it can be defined as not a desire for something or a desire for something that might happen in the future. Another way of putting that is it's Peter Pan faith. I don't know if you've ever watched the movie growing up. It was like my favorite when I was really little. I even dressed up like him as Peter Pan for Christmas with tights and everything when I was like 5. But you've probably read the book or something at one point in your life. It's a big part of our literature and our world. But in Peter Pan, there's a scene or part in the book where Wendy asks Peter Pan how they're going to fly because they're supposed to go to Neverland. And his response is faith and pixie dust. And that's just kind of like, we hope you can fly, and it's all wonderful dreams and stuff. And that's the faith we sometimes think about in our culture, right? And when we say that, we don't always say faith, but we say things like, I hope the Blue Bombers are going to win the Grey Cup. Like, we have some confidence that they could. I actually don't watch the CFL too much. You can hate me later. So I don't actually know if they have a chance of winning, but sometimes we know they might have a chance, but we don't know. We're just hoping. Or we say, we hope we get that job promotion we want. Or we hope we get that raise. Or we hope we go to the school we applied at. Or I hope that person becomes my friend. And we kind of look at faith or hope and trust in a different way. It's something that might not happen. It's just, it could happen. We have a little bit of faith. So that's the Peter Pan kind of faith. And there's another part of faith that we really only talk about in the church, and we say it's a set of beliefs or understandings that we have. So most church websites have a statement of faith. And I know what we mean by that, but it's actually a bad type of word to use faith there. It's something we've used for, I know, hundreds of years probably way back in the Reformation they started using it. But it's not the best word to use because it's really just what our doctrine is, and we could just say that. And it's just a set of things that we need to know and understand. So like if we wanted to go to a Baptist church or like a Pentecostal church, we know the differences and to make sure that we're not a Mormon or Jehovah's Witness. So that's what they're for. But they're more just head knowledge, right? They're not really faith. And I look at this type of faith as like, you know, when you get it's when I get afraid. I don't know what it's for you. It could be maybe going over a bridge or going on a ride. For me, it's going on a ride that I know all the mechanics of it. I've seen a documentary about it. But every time I stand in line, even though it's in the air conditioning, I am sweating more than when I go for a run. I'm like completely drenched. I know the ride's okay. I know the mechanics. I know I'm not going to die, but I feel like I'm going to die. That's the kind of faith that we do in our statement of faith. It's just head knowledge. It should, when we believe it, change the facts of how we live, but it doesn't always. So the faith we're talking about is mankind's trust in God, not just his what he can do for us, but the promises that he has for us, and that it gives us a relationship with him. So that's the kind of trust we're talking about. We know that his promises are true. We know things are going to happen. It's not just it might happen, but we know that God's promised us something, and we know it's going to happen. So it's our trust in him with certainty, not just it might, or it's just not head knowledge, but it's going to happen. And that's the faith that's in the context of this whole chapter, and it kind of runs through the whole book of Hebrews. So a little background on the book of Hebrews, just so we know where we're going, is Hebrews is a letter we don't know who it's written by. There's no author, really. It's not really a letter per se either. It's written in a funny fashion. But what we do know about it is it's written to people who have been under persecution from other Jewish people. So whoever's writing it to them and saying, you guys need to remain faithful. You need to remain trusting in God, even in persecution, because Jesus is better. And he explains earlier in Hebrews why Jesus is better than Moses, why he's better than angels. And when we get to Hebrews 11, he's reminded them that even in your persecution, you can remain faithful and great things are going to happen because one day you're going to be with Jesus. And then he gets here and gives us examples. So that's where we're going to today. We're going to talk about faith, what it means, and how it applies to our lives. and what it can do with our lives too, and help us in our lives. So the first thing we're going to look at, I only have 2 points this morning, but I have lots of subpoints, and this mic lasts for 8 hours apparently too, so, but we won't go that long. We're going to look at a couple points here once I get the iPad working. Sorry. The first point we have is by faith, we have a relationship with God, which I changed the wording of this morning in my mind. It sounds better. Is by faith, we are able to have a relationship with God. So in your blanks there, you can change it or write it the same way. I think it sounds better by faith, we are able to have a relationship with God. So in Hebrews 11, verse 6, it says this, and without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. And this is the basis of that point, that by faith we have a relationship with God. I could have said by faith we are saved, but I wanted to, because of the context of this chapter, is go with relationship. It is true that we're saved from our sins. Because of that, we have a relationship with him, and we trust him, and that's what faith really means. And it says here that we're able to do that not because of things that we've done, not because of things that we give, but because of faith that we have in God. And it kind of continues on. It says, without faith, it's impossible to please. So through this passage, it talks about how the people of the old days or ancient days were commended by their faith. And the whole idea of that is that they were able to please God through that. So it's not what they've done, right? It's just that they've trusted in him. So at first, it kind of almost seems sacrilegious the way it's worded, that, oh, we actually can please God. But it's actually saying you can't please him. You haven't done anything you can please him. All you can do is trust in what he has done and what he's going to do in the future. And he explains what that trust means, this writer, as he goes on. He says, without faith, it's impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists. And that sounds pretty simple, right? But even in a culture that we have tons of knowledge, most people don't believe that God exists. And he's not just saying you believe that a God exists or some type of God exists, but the God of the Bible exists. Because many people, even in this day, but in our day and age too, have different versions of different types of gods. But I think even in our evangelical world sometimes we can let our own opinions form around what God is and not the God of the Bible. So it's not just that there's some God out there who created the universe and is doing something, but that the God of the universe who sent his son to die on the cross for our sins, who died on the cross, raised himself from the dead, and lives and reigns again, that God is the one that we believe exists. And he can do things too. So it's not just believing that a head knowledge thing, but trusting that he is there and putting our faith in him. And that's what the next part is. He says, those who believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. And again, the wording of this one's a little bit funny again. It's almost like we're working our way to salvation because we're seeking after him. But in Romans 3:11, it reminds us that there's no one that seeks after God. It goes through and gives a description of us before we're saved, and it's not a very nice one. It says that our throats are like open graves, that almost everything we say and do is just tainted with sin before God comes after us. So the idea of us seeking him is just what happens after we trust in him. After we trust in him, we have a relationship with him. So that's what the writer is saying there. But the big point of what also happens is that we believe that he rewards us. And we're going to look at a couple different examples very quickly of people of the Old Testament who were rewarded for different things. But they had one reward on their mind too. And it's the same reward that should be in our minds. And sometimes, I know even in my life, we tend to, in the busyness of our cultures, forget that there's another reward, that one day Jesus is coming again and everything's going to be perfect. We're going to be with him and be able to worship him together. So that is what we're starting with. By faith, we have a relationship with God. Our next point is, by faith, we're able to keep our eyes on the true prize. Or by faith, we keep our eyes on what is to come, is another way of saying it. But I thought that was a way for us to remember it better. By faith, we keep our eyes on the prize. So the prize for us is that Jesus is going to come back someday. That he came, he lived, he died on the cross for us. He's reigning right now, but he's going to come back and make all things new. And all these people of the Old Testament, we did that too. And we look, it's always been this way since the beginning of time, before Abraham. Abel's the first guy we got on here, but even before Abel, his parents, it was the same way. But we first have Abel, who by faith, it says that he offered a better sacrifice than Cain. And there it's sounding like he earned his salvation right there. But it is by faith, and what he did was different than Cain. Abel brought his best, Cain didn't. So it was just trusting in that even though he's bringing his best of his flock and giving the best and leaving himself the worst, that in the future God was going to look after him. So it wasn't what he did, but the way that he just trusted in God for what was to come in the future. And even though he was giving of his best, he also looked ahead to know, you know what, even if God doesn't give me what more better than I gave him, in the future I get to be with him. Also, Enoch we don't know a whole lot about. He's just kind of in a list of genealogies. But even in the context of what we read, all the other guys, it just gives their names and how long they live. So the two things we know about Enoch, he didn't live as long as everyone else because God took him. The other thing is that it says he walked with him. And there's different opinions on this. I read lots of books this week, and some people say, oh, it means nothing, it's just in there. But I think that, you know, the Bible's literal. Let's take it literally. If other people walked with God, it would have said that. Enoch, in his generation of, like, for hundreds of years, it seemed like he was the only one in his family line that walked with God. And think about how lonely that must have been, to have many people who didn't walk with you, but he walked with God. So his trust was a different type, to trust the different path that was not the normal path. And he trusted with God, and it says he didn't die. The other person we see here too is Noah. And Noah did a very similar thing to Enoch, but he was asked to build a boat when he didn't really see rain before, it says back in Genesis 2. And he hadn't seen the world flood, and the world would never flood again. So it's a pretty crazy thing to do, even, you know, any culture, right? If someone asks you to build a boat for a world flood, it's a little bit crazy thing to do. And he would have spent all this time building a boat by himself too. That's a lot. The boat, not the float, but the boat was the size of a football field and bigger than your house. So it's pretty big. He spent hundreds of years building it. And he all did that in trusting that God would look after him during the flood. And then Abraham, he was asked to go to a place that he'd never been to before, that his family wasn't there. There really was no one there. With the idea that he would have lots of kids and then that he would bless the world through him too and be able to have a great nation, right? So that was a pretty crazy thing for him to do too, to be able to trust God to go somewhere, not with a car, just on foot, and carry everything by himself with his family and go. So all these guys trusted God and kept their eyes on the prize or the promise that they gave him. But what's interesting about all of these guys, The promise that they were given for that, like, situation didn't come through at that time when they were living. It even says in verse 13, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. Abel, right after he gives his sacrifice, what happens to him? He's killed by his brother. So even if there was blessing from doing what he didn't see it. Enoch, in all of his years of walking by himself here on earth, he didn't get to see anyone else walk with him. It seems pretty cool to go to heaven, which is very exciting to go to heaven, but the immediate promise of having fellowship here, he would have never experienced that. It's still way cooler to go to heaven, but he never got to see people walk with him as he walked with God. Noah, he was saved. He's the only one in all this that got saved from the flood, but in saving the flood, he got to see people around him die. So the promise for him to be saved, I think maybe in his own little heart, he wanted other people to be saved around him. Because if you think, he wasn't just building the boat or the ark. It was an opportunity for everyone in the world that was with him to come into the ark and be saved with him. But instead, he had gone on the ark with just his family. Everyone else died, and he had to restart the world by just his family again. So as much as it's cool that he got saved and that promise for him was fulfilled, no one else in the world got saved, and he had to live with that. Continuing on, Abraham, well, he got to the promised land, kind of, but he lived in tents this whole time, and he really only had two sons. He didn't get to see a huge family come from him. But all these guys, in all of their life, It seemed that as much as they were perfect, as we can see from some of them, they were able to keep going forward even though things weren't always easy for them. We can see lots of times, especially in Abraham and Noah's life, that things were tough. And I don't think just that one little promise about a thing happening on earth kept them going, but the fact that they knew one day Jesus was coming. Now, they wouldn't have known his name was Jesus. They would have just known from the promise that God gave to Adam in the garden that someone was coming to defeat Satan. They didn't know all the logistics about that, all that was going to happen. But I'm sure Adam told people. We see in the Bible that the promise gets built on and built on and built on as we go through the story of the Bible. So I'm sure these guys knew of that promise. And we're looking forward to the one day that Jesus came. They never got to see that, though. But they kept going through all the different times of life that could be difficult and went forward because of their trust in God, a relationship that they had with him. They believed he existed and he kept his promises. And it's the same truth for us. If we go back just a little bit, in Hebrews chapter 10, it says this, "So don't throw away your confidence. It'll be richly rewarded. You need to preserve so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. For it is just a very little while." So that little last sentence is kind of interesting. It says, "For just a very little while." And for sometimes in our life, depending where we're at, life can seem like it's long, right? I remember back when I was very specifically in grade 4. It seemed like school was so long. I couldn't wait till summer began. It was only like October, and I can like picture sitting in my desk and hating grade 4, and just thought that every day was super long. And now I'm only 28, but it's like things just go like that, and life seems pretty quick. And I'm sure when we get to heaven, when we get to be with God for eternity, when he makes the new heavens and new earth, we're going to look back at when we were like here on earth, even like the whole time, we're like, oh, those like, you know, 85 years, 90 years, 70, who knows how long we live, was just like that. So if just for a little while that we're here on this not nice land or place, we have the promise that Jesus is going to come back someday. And for some of us, we might not see Jesus come back. We might not see him come out of the clouds like we see in Revelation 21, see him sitting on his throne. We might die before he comes back. But the cool thing is that he's going to fulfill his promises. So how does that look like in our life? Here on in our culture, it's a little bit different. Like here in Hebrews, they're being persecuted. So there's a chance that someday we'll be persecuted. I don't know if it's going to happen soon. It might be a long time coming. We see the events of what's happening in the States and sometimes can worry that who knows what might come up this way with just even the way that they treat their voting system sometimes. It looks kind of sketchy, right? We don't know what's going to happen. We might never be persecuted in that way. But we can know no matter what that God keeps our promises, even in a culture where we don't really need to trust God most of the time. If you think about it, we were actually in our small group. We were listening to Francis Chan in our small group, and I remember reading, I don't know if it was in the video when we were reading, he was talking about how in North America, we don't really need to ask God for our basic needs. It says in the Bible God will look after our needs, but if it comes down to it, even if we lose our houses and all of our money, the government's going to look after us. So we don't really, practically have to trust God. We could live most of our lives just doing fine and trusting ourselves. And because of that, we've kind of lost that trust sometimes in God because we don't even have to trust him for our basic needs. So it's harder for us sometimes. But we can. We can trust God and do crazy things for him. If you look at Francis Chan's life, they've just moved across country. They were at his pretty big church that he planted, and now he's moved to, not across the country, sorry. He's moved to a different part of California and doesn't have a church and has adopted, I think he's up to 8 kids or something like that, in a small little house, and they just do what God's asked them to do with planting a church in San Francisco. A very hard place to plant churches. And I'm not saying you need to like sell your home and adopt 8 kids and move to like some place in northern Manitoba and plant a church. That's not what God's calling us all to do. But could we, if we needed to, trust God for our basic needs? I think it's much easier to do that if we're focusing ourselves on the prize. And that's what the writer of Hebrews is saying here. If in persecution, it's much harder to trust God if our eyes don't really see that God's promises are true. If we look through all the promises of the Old Testament, we give up the Jesus coming, about Jesus coming at Christmas. It's pretty close, right? We can jump into Christmas. I know I think it's Advent next week, but Jesus was coming at the first time, his first Advent, when he came, they had lots of promises about him. They weren't sure exactly all was going to happen, but all those things came true, and they were able to see that after he came, that he was born as a Nazarene, he was born of a virgin, and he came and defeated Satan when he died on the cross for everyone's sins. So all the promises that God has ever made, he has kept true. And now we have a promise that he's going to come back again. And it says in Revelations that he's going to make a new heaven, a new earth. And Jesus is going to completely change everything so that we don't have any fears, any scares in our lives, anything to make us sad or cry. And we're going to be with him. All those things are a promise that we have ahead coming. And those things make it possible for us to continue life. So life is really, as we start as Christians, is about trusting in God. It's not about trusting in what we can do or what we can bring. Nothing we can do can please him. It's all just trusting in who he is, and he keeps his promises. And life, as we go on, each day, each moment of our lives needs to be about trusting God, that he is one day going to come back. He's a good God who loves us, and he's going to keep his promises. He comes back, and he fully puts Satan away for us, too. So in just a moment, the team's going to come forward, and we're going to sing a song. And the song is going to talk about, you guys can come forward, actually. The song is going to talk about Jesus and looking at his sacrifice, the fact that he died for us. And that's true. He died on the cross for our sins, rose again, and lives now. So as we sing that song, we can be reminded that he kept his promise that he was going to come and defeat Satan. I hope in your mind, as we continue to sing, too, you remember that he's going to come again, and he's going to make all things new, too. And hope that is the one thing that spurs you on in your life as things get tough or when things are easy, that we can have a God who we can trust in. And as we're singing, if the Holy Spirit's put something on you, if you just want someone to pray with you, we'll have people at the front who will be willing to pray with you this morning. I'll give it over to you, Bev.